Episode number 27 of the Fight Night Picks podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. We're also brought to you by Sisu, definitely the best mouthguard I've ever had. Head on over to sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
Today's Thursday, July 12th, episode number 27 of the Fight Night Picks podcast coming at you. Got another couple great interviews. Really excited about this episode, and we've got another one coming out tomorrow. All right, episode number 27 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. So, on Tuesday, former UFC featherweight title challenger Tonya Evinger on the podcast talking about, you know, we talked about the Ultimate Fighter, we talked about her time in Invicta, the fight against Cyborg, and then, you know, when we might see her back in the UFC. We also had a chance to have a conversation with Ty O'Keefe, go over the MMA events from last weekend. So on today's podcast, we actually have Josh Gross. He's the secretary of the MMA Journalists Association. You've seen his work featured on The Guardian as well. He's written the book Ali versus Inoki. And you can find that one on Amazon. And it's the rest of the title. It's The Forgotten Fight That Inspired Mixed Martial Arts and Launched Sports Entertainment. And it's a really interesting read because, and as Josh and I will talk about, you know, big fights, super fights, crossover fights, they've been happening for years and years. I think he actually referenced a fight from the 1920s as, you know, maybe the inception of the first crossover fight or super fight. So it's something that we've seen for a long time. And the discussion right now is kind of stuck on Brock Lesnar and DC and how it's not fair. And, you know, is the UFC an entertainment company? Is it an MMA company? So Josh and I have a conversation about that as well. You know, we talk about where you got to start in MMA journalism. He was one of the pioneers and continues to be one of the biggest names in MMA journalism today. So Josh and I had a conversation as well in this episode. Jose Youngs from Fansided. He's the MMA managing MMA editor over there at Fansided. We talk about, you know, how he got a start in journalism because he kind of got a different start. You know, Josh went one way and Jose went another way. And, you know, he's one of the best guys out there. He shows up at just about every single event. A really, really hard-nosed worker. You can catch his stuff on Twitter. He's also a part of some different podcasts and some different things with Fansided. So Jose and I will get into that. But first of all, let's get right into the interview with Josh. Well, I mean, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. I mean, you're one of the original MMA reporters, and you were pretty fortunate, I mean, to get into the sport before it blew up. How exactly did you get your start in MMA journalism at such an early stage of the game?
Sure. Well, I think I was interested in the fights, and I think like many of us, I started off with that as, you know, my baseline. I enjoyed it. I was training. I was in gyms. I was around fighters. And when I was in school, a friend of mine suggested that, you know, I start writing. And I didn't really have much to write about. I was going to events around Southern California. I felt like Southern California really was the hotbed for the sport, especially at the time when it was in its darkest period. It was basically an underground sport in America. And I had the fortunate ability to be around so much of it. And I enjoyed it as a fan. I loved watching it. But, you know, I discovered that I love journalism as well. And at some point, I combined the two. I was at school at San Diego State and taking a political science class. And we had to go to a function of California government. And for me, I was like, well, I don't want to go to just a regular commission meeting or hearing. So what is there? And I stumbled upon the California Athletic Commission hearing. And they were in the process of looking at rules for mixed martial arts. This was 1999. So the first thing I ever wrote was a piece in April 2000 about the passing of rules in California. That was a big kickoff for the expansion of the sport, and it was a major moment, and I was fortunate enough to be there in person, cover it, meet a lot of the players who were involved with it, including UFC officials and Pride officials and fighters themselves, and really just jumped into the deep end after that.
I mean, that's definitely an awesome story, a great way to get your start. I mean, who would have thought, you know, you're looking at commission meetings to start off with, and then you get right into the MMA journalism. And right now you host a podcast with Jeff Sherwood on Patreon. I mean, what was it like working with Jeff at Sherdog early on and then reuniting with him to put together this podcast?
That's great, Jeff. Jeff and I have become friends over the years, and I was really honored to have served as executive editor of Sherdog for 4 years before I left to go to work for Sports Illustrated. We did a lot of great things there. I felt like Sherdog at the time when I went, which was 2004, was, you know, among the preeminent news sites there were, or at least like resources for fight fans. There was a major forum. They were doing the Fight Finder. I thought that I could bring an added layer to their coverage, really have an influence on the kinds of things that they were covering, the direction of the coverage, the quality of the coverage. And as executive editor, I put a lot of time and had a lot of support from Jeff to be able to do those things. He deferred to me. He let me run the ship. He really let me have you know, really editorial control of the website, and that was something that I was grateful to have. And I tried to do right by him. And it's always good to talk to Jeff. Jeff has just a good guy. He's always been just a very good person, and I know that he still enjoys the fights and doesn't watch them the same way as he used to, just as I don't. But you know, it's fun to just get together and share our opinions, and people enjoy it. And you know, we do it for ourselves as much as anything. You know, it's not, we're not gonna pay our mortgage on off of it, but you know, we do enjoy it. And it's the most money I've ever made off any podcast I've ever done. I was doing podcasts for ESPN and Sports Illustrated, and just kind of came with the package. And I'm enjoying it, and I appreciate the people who support us on Patreon very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. Ever since I've started this podcast, I mean, I really enjoy it. I'm learning new things, and the big thing for me is that if there's any takeaways for any of the fans listening to us or myself, it's that I want them to learn something new every time they listen to the podcast. That's probably the biggest thing. I mean, you're still involved with writing about MMA. I just read one of your articles for The Guardian that came out a couple days ago, you know, regarding Brock Lesnar's return to the UFC to fight Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight belt. And I mean, it's nothing new. We've seen some fights kind of similar to this in the past. You have, you know, GSP returning to fight for a title in a division he hasn't fought in, and he hadn't fought in the UFC in a number of years as well. I mean, we've seen James Toney in the UFC, Kimbo Slice, CM Punk. Do you think that with the recent streaming deals between Bellator and Matchroom and DAZN, and then as well we've had the UFC and ESPN Plus, do you think we're going to see more MMA promotions engage in more of like a fan value or entertainment type fights coming up?
I think they certainly would like to. You know, I think some of them are conscious of not going too far. UFC certainly has been, although there have been moments where they pushed the envelope. I think like any promoter has, Bellator certainly has. I would take issue with some of the matches they've promoted in recent years. But there is that line. Mixed martial arts is a hybrid sport, and it has a lot of connection to pro wrestling, and it always has. And this is something that I've learned intimately, and I came to accept in real ways as I was writing my book about the Muhammad Ali and Tony Inoki match. I knew that the connections were there. I've been to Japan. I've seen Pride. I knew that Pancrase was a pro wrestling based organization, like, you know, those sorts of things where, you know, it was an effort to prove that pro wrestling was the best fighting style. So I knew these things existed, but I never took them seriously because to me, mixed martial arts was always about, all right, who's the best fighter? And I want to see who the best fighter in the world is. And that was the really where I came down on pretty much everything in terms of my perspective. I'm a sports guy. I love sports. I want to know who's the best. And so I understand that my perspective isn't necessarily the perspective of a lot of fans. People can have multiple interests when they watch a sport that they'll want that entertainment quotient to be kicked up. And I think it comes with the territory. Combat sports, fight promotion has always been on the far fringes of, you know, getting people's attentions, of capitalizing off of that. And sometimes they'll push the envelope in ways that may seem unnecessary, unseemly, you know, all sorts of things. I think the key is not to take it too seriously. You know, people are smart, and they can determine what makes sense for them and what holds value for them. And for some people, they may just want to shut off their mind and not have to worry about anything. And, but, you know, they'll get that with some of the lower brow entertainment value that comes with mixed martial arts. Some people may not like that at all and seek different things from the sport. And I think there's room for all of us. So I think you're right. These things have been happening for a long time, not just for the last 15, 20 years, not since 1993, but in combat sports period. You know, we've seen these matches sort of try to capture the public's imagination. One I point to is Jack Dempsey in the 1920s against Ed Strangler Lewis, who was the biggest pro wrestler, the most famous grappler in America. You know, these kinds of matches, these kinds of ideas, if it's always existed, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather didn't just come up with this stuff on their own. And so I think it's just part of the unique fabric of what mixed martial arts is and all combat sports as a whole, but especially MMA, because it does touch so many different strains. Sometimes it can feel less sporting than boxing. It certainly has all the sporting elements that I love, but it has a lot of the dynamics that people appreciate too. And it can feel confused sometimes. But again, I think the key to that is just, you know, feel what works for you, the stuff you like, pay attention to, the stuff you don't like, you know, don't. And probably best not to get too worked up over any of it. At the end of the day, it is sport. It is intriguing. There's a lot of history and context to it. But compared to all the other things we have going on in our life, you know, I don't think it's overly important necessarily. I think sometimes it's important to keep perspective of that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the Ali versus Inoki book, it's definitely a must read. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at right now in my, you know, MMA discovery and what I'm looking into as far as, you know, the history, you know, Pancrase, Shooto, crossover from pro wrestling into MMA, some of those fights, you know, obviously probably the biggest name to come out of that kind of scene, you know, recently, I guess, or in the last 20, 25 years, Sakuraba for sure. And that's kind of where I've been lately. Just before I let you go, Josh, you know, I just wanted to ask you a couple questions about the MMA Journalists Association. It's a fairly new concept, and I just kind of wanted to know where the association kind of came about, where it came from, and what we can kind of expect to see in the future from the association.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the question. The MMA Journalists Association is a collection of working journalists in the sport who have come together to form an association, essentially. And you see this in other media environments. Different sports have different associations or media groups that cover them. There's a Boxing Writers Association, for instance. Essentially, you know, it's a group that is designed to elevate the interests of the working journalists who cover whatever field that they're in. For us, it's mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts has always had a interesting story in terms of the media, its relationships to promoters, its relationships to fighters, some of the things that media have had to deal with because it came from really an underground place. It's not more of a traditional sport with a lot of history to it in terms of its the way it's been covered by media. You know, I think some of the things that the media has had to deal with have not necessarily been things that you've seen in other sports, at least in large ways. And so it's basically an advocacy group for journalists in the sport, for people who are interested in journalism and try and do it for a living. Hopefully we're a resource for them. We can advocate for their interests. We can make ourselves better through camaraderie, through all sorts of you know, things to elevate us. And I feel like there's lots of room for growth, and I'm certainly included in that. And for me, I'm a secretary. We had our we had a vote earlier in the year for our board members. Ben Folks is the president, and Ariel Helwani's vice president. I'm secretary. Mark Ramondi's treasurer. We have a board of people from across the media spectrum. You know, the idea again is to advocate for us as a group. You know, there's been moments, very public moments, where media members have been under duress, I would say unfairly, generally speaking. And so for us, hopefully we can speak on their behalf when necessary. And just act as a resource and a place where we can come together and also celebrate the content we create. I think mixed martial arts journalism does create a ton of really excellent content. I would put up the content and the coverage of mixed martial arts compared to most sports. I really would. I think we do a fantastic job, all things considered. And one of the things we do is look at the kind of journalism that's created over a year and recognize people who did outstanding work, and I think that's always nice. And there's lots of room for us to grow. I mean, you see other journalist associations are associated with sports in other ways. Hall of Fame. I'm not sure if necessarily if we're going to do that, but there's always those kinds of possibilities. So it's open-ended, Craig. I think there's a lot of room for growth. We're just in the very beginning stages of this. In terms of like really moving forward as an association, it took a long time to get it off the ground. It was an effort I was involved with from day one. We had meetings, kicked around different ideas, wrote a constitution, wrote rules and regulations, had to go through processes to become a non-profit. So it wasn't like a snap of the fingers and saying, oh, we're an association now. We're actually like a real group, and, you know, we have a real mission. And, anybody who's interested in journalism and mixed martial arts, we hope you reach out to us, hope you apply, hope you want to become a member. And if you have any questions, you can always feel free to reach out. I think the website's MMAJA.com, I think it is.
Yep.
Any more information you can check out there, or feel free to reach out to any of us on the board, on Twitter, wherever it is. But, it's just a process to really bring the industry together and make us better as we move forward. Because the sport is only going to continue to grow. The amount of money in the sport is only going to continue to elevate. The amount of attention is only going to continue to increase. And it's a big, big business now. And journalism is an important piece of continuing that advancement. Because, like anything, anything, especially that's big business, anything that has huge public attention, I think you need a healthy media to cover those industries, those people in charge, the decision makers, the government oversight. I mean, there's a lot of layers to what mixed martial arts is, and it's not an easy sport to cover. And so for the people who do choose to cover it, again, hopefully the MAJA is a resource and a group that they can come to rely on as their careers progress.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a great resource for journalists everywhere out there covering the sport to reach out to. And if there's ever any issues, to rely on other media members. I know since I've begun to cover MMA at a professional capacity, everyone's been great, whether it's covering regional shows, you know, reaching out to different media members. Everyone's been receptive and, out there with open arms. And I really appreciate it. And in future, as I continue to grow, I definitely like to apply to be a part of the association, because I think it's definitely a great resource, like you said. Josh?
Well, please do. And I will say that I didn't know you, and you sent me a direct message, and I saw it, and I was happy to come on your show. And I've always treated media people the way that I would have wanted to be treated. I'm happy to have joined your show, and anything I can do, like if you want me to feature appearances, happy to do that. But please reach out about the association. I'd be glad to talk to you about it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Josh. So where can people find you online right now?
Well, I'm on Twitter. It's at @YAY_YEE. And I'm also contributing mixed martial arts content for The Guardian and freelancing in different places. That's basically the gist of my coverage. I have not been driving on the mixed martial arts beat as heavily as I did a few years ago, although I certainly would re-engage if the circumstances were right. But I've had focuses elsewhere, writing books, focusing on other projects, documentary projects, things like that. And, so be on the lookout. If you're interested in a documentary I worked on, you can check out Mask. It's the story of Charles Mask Lewis, the Tap Out founder. I worked on that with Bobby Rezac, who's a documentary filmmaker and a production partner of mine. So those are the kinds of things I've been putting a lot of energy into. And then the occasional story on The Guardian, like you read, or I wrote a big profile about Greg Hardy before his debut on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. So those are the kinds of pieces that I continue to do, and hopefully people check them out. Also the podcast, which you mentioned before, so thank you for that.
So fortunate to be able to have Josh Gross on the show. I mean, one of the early MMA journalists out there covering the sport for SureDog. I mean, that was, at the height of the website. It's still there. It's one of the resources I definitely draw from. I spend a lot of time on SureDog and also on Tapology, kind of looking at records, looking at finishes versus decisions, things like that, how I form my opinion. And the biggest thing about our show is that I love to have MMA journalists on and different minds, because I like to see how different people think. I mean, I break down fights totally different than, let's say, Steve Riccardi that I had on a few episodes ago, or Evil Eddie. We all look at things a different way, and it's great to get a different perspective, because if you if you're doing the same thing over and over and over again and you're kind of in an echo chamber, you're not going to learn anything. And like I said to Josh when we were talking, the biggest takeaway I want you guys to have when you listen to the podcast is that you get a chance to learn something with every episode. Or I might be able to, you know, splash a little bit of insight on a fighter that you weren't aware of. And then they go out there and they put on a great performance and then we're all happy. So I really appreciate Josh coming on, and hopefully we can have him on again, because he's definitely, you know, one of the top MMA journalists out there still. So at this time, I'd like to thank my sponsors. We're brought to you today by firstrow.ca. Head on over to that website. It's firstrow.ca. First Row Collectibles, and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order. And we've had a big boost there in American listeners, so you guys keep in mind that you're going to be saving roughly 25% on your order if you make an order with First Row, as all the prices on the website are in Canadian dollars. And Curtis at First Row, he's got wrestling autographs, MMA autographs, old baseball cards, hockey cards. I mean, when I was a kid, and geez, I mean, even up until somewhat recently, you know, I still have a huge collection of hockey cards and baseball cards from when I was a kid. I mean, I'm looking at some of them right now. So I know a lot of you guys out there are collectors as well. So head on over to First Row. Use promo code FNP at checkout. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouth Guards. I mean, I've had a Sisu Mouth Guard for a number of years. One game of hockey, I didn't wear my mouth guard. I get hit right in the tooth and it came out. And it cost me a lot of money out of pocket and it was a pain. And I shouldn't have been wearing my mouth guard. And with Sisu, I mean, they're thin mouth guards, they're boil and bite, but they're a lot thinner than, you know, your average mouth guard. If somebody were to wear one in the UFC, they used to have a former big name UFC fighter that was one of their affiliates. But if you were to wear one in the UFC, you'd be able to talk to your corner people, you'd be able to take interviews after the fight without popping your mouth guard out, you could eat, drink with it in. For me in hockey, it was definitely special because I could yell across the ice for a pass, you could understand me on the bench. And Sisu's recently partnered up with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. A sale, or a bit of the proceeds from every sale, 10%, will go towards Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation on all yellow mouth guards in the Aero and Junior styles. So you can still head over to Sisu, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off, and they'll be donating 10% of the proceeds to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So why don't we get right into the conversation with Jose Youngs? We talked about his role with Fansided. You know, he's the managing MMA editor over there as well. I mean, you probably caught him or seen him somewhere at MMA event somewhere in North America. I mean, he seems to travel to just about every single event. So I'm really fortunate to have Jose on, and here's my conversation with him. I'd really like to thank you for coming on. I mean, I definitely really appreciate it. You're, of course, managing MMA editor at Fansided. Just wanted to ask you to start. How did you get involved in MMA media, and then how did you get involved with Fansided specifically?
So I used to intern at ArizonaSports.com, which is a local radio, and they're the website for the radio station Arizona Sports 98.7 FM out here in Arizona, and they're the flagship station for all the Arizona teams, like the Diamondbacks and the Cardinals, the Coyotes, the Suns, all the football, the college teams and everything. And I was interning for them. And then they, at the time, were Arizona Sports, 620 AM. And then they transitioned over 98.7 FM. And with that, they redid their website. And they added an MMA section. I was interning for them at the time. And I just started to write about MMA just because I loved it. And I was the only one that wanted to do it. And from there, I just started going to events and just loved it so much that I just stuck with it, met the right people, busted my butt, and eventually I met Mike Dice, who used to be the managing editor for not just the MMA section, but all of Fansided. He was like in charge of MMA, NFL, MLB, NBA, everything. And he saw what I was doing, and he told me to come write for him, so I did. And then from that point on, Mike went on to bigger and better things. He's doing really well at NBC Sports Chicago. And when he left, I kind of stepped up into his place. So it's pretty much just been hard work and meeting the right people and making the right connections and just grinding away. And so here I am. That was about 5 years ago when I started this journey.
Nice. Now, are you exclusive to MMA Media? Like, I noticed on your Twitter bio, you've got a few different projects going on.
I pretty much only do MMA. takes up so much of my time is, as you know, there's no off season.
Yeah.
But I've written about baseball, basketball, football, hockey, volleyball. I've written about pretty much any sport you can name. I've written about. I can write about it if they need me to. I know at FanSided during things like the NBA draft or the World Cup or the World Series or Super Bowl, whatever they have, if it's all hands on deck, like I can. If they need someone written, I can do it. But it's I'm pretty much almost 99% MMA at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know since I've started covering MMA professionally, I mean, I'm such a big fan of other sports, the Canadians and hockey, the Red Sox and baseball. I mean, I went down to a Red Sox game a couple of weeks ago, and I honestly had a hard time recognizing some of the Mariners players. And I know, like, every player on every team. And this year, it's totally, you know, up in air. But, yeah, I mean, you got to dedicate all of your time to the sport. And I saw you there last week, your International Fight Week. I mean, what was that like for you? It was a huge event, and it must have been something special.
Yeah, it was pretty great. This is like my fifth or sixth International Fight Week. This one, there's never a calm one. I mean, I'm sure you've heard there's always an injury, like the last four falling apart. It's obviously not as big as when Conor McGregor fought at 189, and it didn't feel as big as when John Jones and Daniel Cormier were supposed to fight at UFC 200, plus it was UFC 200. But this one definitely had the big fight feel. It's always nice when the heavyweight title's on the line. And when they do these two fight cards in 2 days, that's always a lot of work. But this one definitely had that big fight feel, but not as big as ones in the past, but still big compared to the other fight cards of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it was a shame when the ratings came out and everybody kind of grumbled the fact that, I mean, it did about, what, a little over 400,000 buys. But it was, to me, it was probably the biggest, hopefully, fingers crossed it isn't, but it was probably the biggest card of the year, 226. And, I mean, I thought that the Ultimate Fighter finale definitely delivered. I mean, Israel Adesanya is on another level right now. So hopefully they're able to kind of push that momentum into the second half of the year and we're able to see some really good cards.
Yeah, I mean, Israel Adesanya is one of the bigger stars of the whole weekend. He put that beating on Brad Tavares. There was a couple 50-45s across the board. So I would say outside of Daniel Cormier, Israel Adesanya was the biggest winner of the weekend. So hopefully they can do something with it.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, this upcoming weekend, there's two Bellator events. But what we're going to focus on is, you know, UFC's Fight Night in Boise. And we're going to look at some of the more intriguing and entertaining matchups. So I would say probably, you know, biggest matchup on the main cards, obviously, your main event between Junior Dos Santos and former Bellator and World Series of Fighting heavyweight champ Blagoy Ivanov. Were you overly familiar with Ivanov before this fight was announced?
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen him fight a lot in World Series of Fighting. He defended his heavyweight title at World Series of Fighting, I think like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I believe he actually defended it into when they transitioned over to the Professional Fighters League, and he does have a TKO win over former UFC champion Sean Jordan, I believe, and he has a win over LeVar Johnson at Bellator, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
But his only loss is to Alexander Volkov, so I was always on. He's always on my radar as a potential heavyweight contender if he ever did sign with the UFC. A little surprised they gave him Junior Dos Santos right off the bat in the main event, but I was pleasantly surprised because I think Ivanov is so good that he's one of those fighters that doesn't need a warm up fight. He can just go swim with the sharks right away. So I'm pretty excited about it.
And he's really similar to, I mean, Alexander Volkov in certain ways. I mean, he's risen up through the ranks with different organizations. Of course, like we had both said, I mean, heavyweight champ, and he defended his title multiple times with that big win over Jordan and then Alan Carr, I guess, in PFL. I think the really special thing that isn't getting as much attention, and it did in Bellator, they did a feature on him in 2014 that explained how he fought Fedor in 2008 at the World Sambo Championships, and he won. Then he fought in Japan with two broken hands and won a fight there. And then he got stabbed in a club with a 12-inch knife, was placed in an 86-day coma, and then he came back a year and a half later and just kept, you know, fighting on a roll and winning fights. I mean, this fight, I would say probably the winner is going to face a top five opponent. And my pick in this fight, I really see Ivanov, you know, making a statement. I mean, kind of flying under the radar this whole card and this main event for sure. But I think Ivanov's going to be something special for the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, he could definitely win. My money would have to be on Junior. He is a former champion. I think he's going to be a top five heavyweight for a long time to come. And if you look at the guys he's lost to, I mean, he's lost to Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, and Stipe Miocic. So pretty much four champions. I mean, three champions, three of the greatest heavyweights, top ten heavyweights of all time. I obviously think Junior's one of the greatest heavyweights either as well. But I just think Junior hits harder than pretty much anyone in that division, so I'm going to have to go with JDS. But I will say it's not going to go five rounds, that's for sure.
No, for sure. I totally agree with you, and I can see that from your side as well. The co-main right now, as far as the UFC website is concerned, is between Super Sage Northcutt and Zach Otto. And I really think this is going to be another tough fight for Sage Northcutt. I mean, he's on a two-fight win streak with wins over Quinones and also Thibaut Goody. But at the same time, Zach Otto, he's 3-2 in the UFC. I mean, he knocked out Mike Pyle in Mike Pyle's retirement fight, which was kind of surprising, actually, that Otto got a knockout. I mean, Sage Northcutt, he's been with Team Alpha Male for some time now, but he's moving up a weight class. I mean, he looked huge on the Twitter pictures and Instagram pictures at one point, but I still think, I mean, you really got to be a well-rounded fighter. And I believe Zach Otto's got 10 wins by, he's got 10 wins by submission, and 13 of his 16 wins have been by finish. So it's going to be a tough test for Sage Northcutt.
Yeah, and if you look at Zach Otto's career, he's been up and down in the UFC. I mean, he does have, like, his wins over Josh Bergman and Mike Pyle. Like, Bergman and Pyle have probably, like, 60 fights between them combined. Yeah. But then he has losses like Lee Jiliang, who hits hard but isn't the best fighter. So this is definitely a good test for Sage Northcutt. I think he can get through someone with the pedigree of Otto. It'll cement himself for welterweight. And if he gets absolutely outclassed, he can always drop down to lightweight, where he does have that two-fight win streak. I'm pretty sure he's 0-2 at welterweight inside the UFC, and he's undefeated at lightweight, so it would make sense for him to stick around at lightweight. But if he feels healthier, I'm all for fighters fighting healthy. So this is definitely one I have my eyes on, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a great fight. Now, whether that's co-main or Dennis Bermudez, Rick Glenn's co-main, not totally sure right now. I mean, different websites have different things. But as far as the Bermudez-Rick Glenn fight goes, I think it's actually pretty cut and dry. I don't really think many stats are needed, and I don't need to go through records. But, you know, Rick Glenn, he's got a 6-inch height advantage, 4 inches of reach. The last time he fought a much smaller opponent was when he fought Gavin Tucker at Halifax, Nova Scotia. And hopefully he's going to be fighting at the UFC Moncton event coming up in October. I did a piece on that this morning. But Rick Glenn, I mean, former World Series of Fighting champ, knocked out Georgie Karakanyan in 2014. And he's stylistically pretty similar to Dennis Bermudez. I mean, really great takedowns, great ground game in his last fight in ACB. And I mean, Bermudez, he's lost 3 in a row, 1 by TKO, obviously, to Korean Zombie. And then, I mean, close fights with Darren Elkins and Andre Feely by split decision. But I'd like to get your take on that fight. You could, you know, totally think something different than myself.
Well, I think Dennis Bermudez is one of the, I don't want to call him a stepping stone, because he is a really great fighter. But, like, all those names you said, like, Carl Lamas, Jeremy Stephens, two of the best fighters in the division. And even his loss to Jeremy Stephens, he was winning that whole fight and got caught by a flying knee against a fighter who had missed weight. Chan Sung Jung, you could argue, was an early stoppage, but he was definitely rocked. And then one of those judges gives the one scorecard to him in either Elkins or Feely. We're talking about Dennis Bermudez being on a two-fight win streak and wins in 4 of his last 5.
Yeah.
So does he have a 3-fight losing streak? Yes, but it's not like he's getting absolutely dominated. So I would have to pick him to win. I think he's one of the better featherweights in the division. I don't think his ranking or record is really indicative of his overall skills. Because even if you look at his past, he did have 7 straight wins. He has the stoppage of Clay Guida. He has wins over Kawajiri. I mean, he's beaten really good guys. He's just come up short against the elite guys. So I'm going to have to give the edge to him. Just because I just think he's a better fighter. But Rick Glenn is great. I just think Dennis Bermudez is a slight tick ahead of him.
No, for sure. That's totally fair. You've also got the Randy Brown-Nico Price fight on the main card. I mean, that's kind of a tough one for me to call. Brown's 10-2. He's got recent wins over Brian Camozzi, Mickey Gall, which, I mean, Mickey Gall, that's somewhat impressive, really. And he's got, he had 6 finishes before he entered the UFC. But Nico Price, I think he lives up to his nickname. He's definitely a hybrid type fighter. His only loss to Vicente Luque, and I mean, that's no shame. 10 of 11 wins by finish. I mean, I think he's a more well-rounded fighter in my mind's eye, but really, if you break it down and look into the numbers, he's not as accurate at takedowns as Brown. He's a much less accurate striker, and he also absorbs more damage in his fights.
Yeah, I just think Nico Price is one of the more... he's a finisher. He's a very exciting fighter. I mean, all of his wins have basically come by stoppage in the UFC. Well, not basically. They've all come by stoppage. Yeah, he does have that one no contest, but it's because he tested positive for marijuana. It's not like he was taking steroids and knocking people out. So he could have, what, like 4 wins in the UFC? He said he has 3 wins, 1 loss, 1 no contest. And even the one he lost was a submission loss, and that was a really good fight. So he's one of those guys that kill or be killed. He does have that submission over Brandon Thatch. Brandon Thatch, that's monstrous. And Nico Price is not the biggest welterweight in the world. Randy Brown, he is coming off that win over Mickey Gall. That was back in November 2017, so he's been out for a while. Mickey Gall is great. He's an exciting kid. Everyone knows who he is because he beat Sage North, because CM Punk. But you beat Sage North, because CM Punk, and Mike Jackson. Like, you basically beat 2 amateurs and then Sage North. So I don't know how, if you're the elite, I don't know how you, how much, how well you can judge Randy Brown's skills based off of a decision win over Mickey Gall. Does have the loss to Bilal Muhammad, who's the definition of just a well-rounded, all-around great veteran. He's on a 4-fight win streak. And he's won 3 since beating Randy Brown. So I'm going to have to give the edge to Nico Price. I just think he's a better all-around fighter. But I don't see this going 3 rounds either, simply because Nico Price can't reach the judges' scorecard, it seems like.
Yep.
He has 10 stoppages. His only loss has been a stoppage. The only decision he had was before he even got in the UFC. So I'm going to go Nico Price by stoppage. But Randy Brown is also extremely tall, so it's a fascinating matchup.
Yeah, for sure. It should be, you know, a great fight, and I would assume as well Nico Price is going to get the finish in that one. Should be, you know, possible fight of the night contender. But another one, possible fight of the night contender, between Miles Jury and Chad Mendes, coming off a long USADA suspension. And, you know, his last 2 fights, they were losses to Conor McGregor and Frankie Edgar, both by knockout. And he hasn't fought since December of 2015. And Miles Jury's kind of quietly been on a run in the UFC. I mean, you know, win over Rick Glenn, who's ahead of him on the card. And I listened to the TSN MMA podcast with Aaron Bronstetter and Adam Martin here recently, and Chad Mendes was on there, said he had a great camp. You know, I expect him to come out swinging, but at the same time, Miles Jury has a nice height and 7 inches of reach on Mendes. So, I mean, if Mendes is really overly aggressive, he could definitely get caught. And at the same time, I read that he had an interview with Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, and apparently he packed on a ton of mass, and he's walking around at roughly 170. So that one's kind of a tough pick for me, but it should be a really entertaining fight for sure.
Yeah, Miles Jury is one of those guys that I remember when he won, like, what, 5 in a row?
Yeah.
He's 15-0 with 5 straight wins in the octagon, and then he beat Takanori Gomi and Diego Sanchez back-to-back, and people thought this was, like, the next guy in the lightweight division. Then he runs into Donald Cerrone and Charles Oliveira, Donald Cerrone put the beat down on him, and Charles Oliveira submitted him. Took a long time off, so you have to wonder how he would do on his return. Absolutely steamrolled Mike De La Torre. Obviously beat Rick Glenn. Chad Mendes is coming off a 2-year suspension for anti-doping violation. I think this is a perfect fight for him. I know he just wants to fight, but he doesn't want just a no-name fighter to get back in there. Miles Jury's looked great of lately. He does have the big wins over Gomi and Sanchez, so casual fans know who those guys are. Miles Jury's no pushover. I think this is a perfect fight for both of them and where they're at in their career. I think this is a great card for them. I have no idea who I'm going to pick. I think if you're just going to look at the scorecards, you'd have to say Chad Mendes. But Chad Mendes, like I said, hasn't fought in 2 years, and his last loss was a violent knockout loss to Frank Edgar. Before that, it was a violent TKO loss to Conor McGregor. He does have the 2 losses to Jose Aldo. So pretty much he's only lost to former UFC champions, and he's beaten everyone else. So if you just look at at paper, you'd have to go Chad Mendes. Miles Jury's been more active. I have no idea who to pick. I think it's a 50-50 gimme fight.
Should be a great fight for sure. And then I guess the first fight that's on that main card, you've got a couple bantamweight, women's bantamweights, in Kat Zingano taking on Marion Renault. And if you look at it, I mean, the records are almost identical, but Kat Zingano's lost 3 in a row dating back to 2015. She had a fight against Rousey, and then a year later, Pena, And then a year later, Ketlin Vieira, who I saw some rumblings there on Twitter before we came on. There's a possibility she might fight for an interim bantamweight title against Holly Holm, possibly. But then again, Kat Zingano, she's got wins over Barb Honchak, Raquel Pennington, Misha Tate, Amanda Nunes. And Renault, I mean, she's got three wins and a draw in her last four. That draw to Betch Kohea kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But at the same time, I mean, she had the submission over Sarah McMahon, who, you know, she's not that great on the ground for a wrestler, for sure. But that was definitely a great win for her. So in my mind, I would take Renault to get the win here. I mean, I think she's going to keep moving closer to a top five opponent. She's slightly better in striking metrics. And she's not really somebody that would look for a takedown. But then again, if the fight goes to the ground, I think she's got ample enough ground game to win the fight.
Yeah, and Kat Zingano is obviously everyone knows who she is. She has those wins, those TKO wins, the stoppage wins over Pennington, Tate, and Nunes. Tate and Nunes, obviously former champions. And then she ran Ronda Rousey, lost a handful to Pena and Ketlin Vieira. But if you look at when she's fighting, she basically fought. She's only fought five times in the UFC, and it's pretty much been like once a year, like 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. Didn't fight in 2017, and then came back in 2018. So she doesn't fight a whole lot. This is the fastest turnaround she's ever had. She just fought in March, and she lost to Ketlin Vieira by split. This is the fastest turnaround she's ever had. So I'm very curious to see how she does. It seems like every time Kat Zingano fights, the narrative is she's coming off a long layoff. She hasn't fought in a long time. I'm very curious how she looks coming off such a fast turnaround. Marion Renault is one of the older women in the division. Definitely a game opponent. She obviously has that submission win over Sarah McMahon. I think she won that fight against Betch Kohea. And then if you look at who she lost to, it was a split decision loss to Ashley Evans Smith. Ashley Evans Smith is one of those veteran fighters. One judge scores in favor of Renault. She wins that fight. And then she went to a decision against former champion Holly Holm. Holly Holm went to a decision against Cyborg. Yeah. Holly Holm knocked out Ronda Rousey. Holly Holm couldn't finish Marion Renault. I think this is a really good fight. I think Marion Renault is going to win it. I don't want to say by submission or anything, but I'm very curious to see how Kat Zingano looks when she's not taking so much time off. So this is low-key a really great fight. This is one of my fights to watch outside of the main event. But yeah, I love this fight.
Yeah, for sure. And it should be a great matchup. And then you said, you know, that's one of your fights that you got your eye on. Probably a potential fight of the night. The best fight, I think, all night is actually on the undercard, on the prelims. You've got number 10 ranked featherweight Darren Elkins, and he's taking on 17-1 Alexander Volkanovski. And I mean, Elkins is on such a ride. 6-fight win streak going back to 2014. Wins over Mirsad Bektik, Bermudez, Michael Johnson. I mean, I was surprised in that Michael Johnson fight. And at the same time, Volkanovski's on a 14-fight win streak with four of those in the UFC. And if you look into the numbers, like Volkanovski versus Elkins, like Volkanovski lands, it's almost 6 significant strikes per minute compared to Elkins' 3.14. And he absorbs almost half as many strikes. Like, he's super accurate, great striker. His takedown average is higher than Elkins. His takedown defense is a lot higher than, like, almost twice as high as Elkins. And to me, that tells a lot. I mean, Elkins definitely has the advantage. You know, he's fought top competition and he's seemingly beat everyone. But, you know, I really want to take Volkanovski in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be the safer bet, I think, if you're looking at it on paper. But if you look at Darren Elkins' opponents, like his resume, like Michael Johnson's win, Mirsad Bektik, who's like low-key one of the best fighters in that entire division, Chaz Kelly, Robert Whiteford, Hato Kiyoki, like, he's been in the UFC for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
He's fought a hoot with the lightweight division. This is the best we've ever seen. He's looked like a completely different fighter since going up to Team Alpha Male. I would say going back, every fight he's been, all 6 straight wins he's had, he's probably been the underdog.
Yeah,
Robert Whiteford, definitely Bektik, Bermudez, and Johnson, and he's won every single one. Not only is he winning, he's submitting Michael Johnson, he's knocking, like, that Mirsad Bektik is one of the best fights I've ever seen. He lost the first 2 rounds badly, and then knocked out Bektik with a head kick. That's pretty much Bektik's only loss. That's it. Bektik, Bektik since then has knocked out Pepe and beaten Ricardo Lamas, so It's weird to me that Darren Elkins and Volkanovski are on the undercard because this fight is so good against two surging featherweights. I don't think they care. I don't think Darren Elkins likes being the underdog. I'm going to have to go with Elkins strictly because every time I think he's going to lose, he wins. So I'm going to have to go with him.
Yeah, I mean, that you make a good point there, and I think he's had about 18 fights in the UFC over that span, so he's always active, and it's definitely a bit of a slight on him that he's not on the main card, but it is a pretty stacked main card. Are there any other fights on this card that you'd like to go over, some that kind of pique your interest?
I'm obviously looking forward to the Justin Scoggins Sadner Magomedov fight. Justin Scoggins was, I remember when he was coming up, he won those back-to-back fights at flyweight. Then he lost that split decision to Dustin Ortiz that everyone thought he could have won. He's like a flyweight Stephen Thompson. Like, he's very good karate stance. He's just very wide. He's very big to the division. We beat him, John Moraga, until he lost. Has that win over Ray Borough, who's like one of the best fighters at flyweight. Fought Demetrius Johnson. Has wins over who's who. I think his opponent, Sadner Magomedov, it's hard. Anytime you get one of those Eastern Europe, like those Western, Eastern Russian guys, you have to put money on them. They've been so dominant in the past. You obviously have Khabib Nurmagomedov, Zabit out there. It's hard to bet against them. But at the same time, Justin Scoggins is one of the more impressive fighters in that division. Obviously, Eddie Wineland, Alejandro Perez, which is the featured prelims fight. I was at Alejandro Perez's last fight when he asked for Eddie Wineland. He's on, I believe, 4 or 5 fight unbeaten streak. His only loss was because Perez was hit Albert Morales after the bell. So they docked the point. So he should have won that fight. But so he could easily be on a 6-fight win streak. I think that fight is going to be the fight of the night. Eddie Wineland is never in a boring fight. Alejandro Perez is never in a boring fight. I don't know who's going to win that fight. Eddie Wineland, obviously former UFC champion, championship contender. Alejandro Perez, an up-and-coming fighter. So I'm going to have to go with one of those two fights for sure. And then you got Jessica Aguilar, who's former World Series of Fighting champion, against Jody Escobel. They were supposed to fight in Utica, but then the New York City Athletic Commission messed up and pulled the fight, and they rebooked him right away. Those are two are veterans of the sport. Like, they've been around for a long time. Jessica Aguilar took a long time to get to the UFC. Jody Escobel has been fighting. She was a professional boxer since like 05. Then she turned transitioned over to MMA. I think her only loss, she's owned one UFC, and her only loss is to Carolina Kolakiewicz. And her other two losses are to Alex Chambers and Alex Grasso, two very, very high skilled UFC veterans. So that's the opening fight of the card. So I would say any of those three, I'm very excited for.
Yeah, I mean, it was a shame that Chap Lifts cost us Aguilar and Escobel. That, like, you come into the UFC and you fight Karolina Kolakiewicz, that's always a tough matchup. So it was kind of disappointing, I guess, in a sense. But this fight's going to be really good. Like you said, Aguilar's got that experience going into it. As far as the Eddie Wineland Perez fight, I mean, that one, that's another one. Could be a fight of the night. Both of those guys are going to stand and trade. Neither one of them's going to want to take it to the ground. So it should be a good one there. And then as far as the Scoggins and Nurmagomedov goes, you guys had an article that just came out on Fansided by our pal Ty O'Keefe. And I read through it before we started talking, and I watched a lot of tape on Nurmagomedov today. And I got to say, I mean, Scoggins said he's watched a lot of tape as well. There's not one thing that Nurmagomedov's good at. But I kind of turned that around. He's good at everything. I mean, His movement's good in the cage. He throws a lot of different looks, switches stances, throws a lot of low kicks, and then he'll mix in a high kick here and there. And I think he's going to be able to showcase his skills. However, like you said, a lot of those European fighters that come over, they tend to find success. You talk Khabib, his cousin. But all the PFL fighters that have come over from, ACB, M1 Global, organizations like that, and I've said, oh, watch this guy, and I watched so much tape on them, they've kind of sputtered out of the gate. So not totally sure who to take in that fight, but overall, I mean, this is kind of a sleeper card, and it should be a really good one, combined with Bellator 202 and 203 this weekend.
Yeah, this is going to be it's always the fight card after International Fight Week. You kind of get that lull because people are just so hyped up for like the back-to-back fights during IFL, and then obviously IFW and obviously the big heavyweight championship fight and then the Brock Lesnar nonsense. But these cards are definitely can't miss. If you do miss them, I'm sorry, because usually on these smaller cards you get some of the best fights because people are trying to prove themselves that they belong on the bigger cards. So yeah, definitely don't miss out on anything this weekend.
For sure. Well, awesome, Jose. Thanks so much for coming on. And where can people find you online?
You can find me at Jose Youngs. That's at JOSEYOUNGS on every single social media platform. I believe I'm the only Jose Youngs in the world. So if you find me online, that's probably me. So that's pretty much it.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for coming on. We'll have to have you on again to break down fights. This was fun.
Anytime, man.
Man, I had a lot of fun having Jose on the podcast, breaking down the fights from UFC Boise. That's on Saturday night. We definitely had differing opinions on some of the fights, but I mean, that's just what makes the podcast special. I mean, I like to talk fights, you know, get into the nitty gritty and the numbers. And if we don't agree, that makes it more interesting. And I'd also like to thank Josh Gross for coming on the podcast. Another special interview, and hopefully we can have him on again. He definitely has a totally different insight into MMA. I mean, he was there from the start. And, you know, covered some of the first Ultimate Fighters, you know, in person, was there when Sure Dog first, you know, started to get legs and get moving. So really special to have those two guests on. So we'll be back again tomorrow. Yeah, we're going to have three episodes this week. We're going to be joined by Zubair Asgar from Fighting Alliance, and they're going to be hosting the FA7 Legends promotion in St. John. That's later on in August. So Zubair and I talked about the event. It's actually going to be a really good event. They've got something special planned there with three or four pro fights going to be on the card. And there's also some international fighters as well. So if you're in the New England and Eastern Canadian region, definitely have a look. Tickets are online on their Facebook page. And also you can find them on Twitter and on Eventbrite as well. And Ty O'Keefe's going to come back on. And we're going to talk some more UFC Boise as well. We're going to break down the two Bellator cards. So we'll see you again tomorrow.